So, yeah, let me just press a few buttons here and make sure that we're in the right place. I think we should be. Okay, that seems to be live there. Cool. Okay, everybody, we are live. Welcome to Founders Focus. This is episode 6. I'm really pleased with this series so far. It gives me an opportunity to speak to some really, really smart folks who are changing the way in which we work and think about recruiting. So today is episode 6, and I'm delighted to welcome on the show Joshua Brenner, CEO of Hired.com. So, Joshua, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Han. Great to be here.
I'm really excited, and you know, a couple of reasons why. Because obviously, Hired has been, you know, a very famous company in the talent marketplace. I think most companies, even competitors, would describe Hired as the business to have really defined the category in this space. So amazing that we're able to speak with the leader of the business today. But also because of the very interesting things happening at the corporate background and in the product side as well. But before we dig into it, let's talk about being a busy CEO. You obviously had to cancel something to be on the show today, Josh. What was that thing that you should be doing rather than speak to me?
Well, it's funny timing because today is a really exciting day for us at Hired. You know, I think we're going to talk about it a little bit later, but we merged with Vettery, which was the number two hiring marketplace earlier this year, or last year, I should say. And today is the launch of our new brand as we're combining the company. So as we were, you know, getting ready to start this, I was just firing off some emails, and probably after this, I'll be back with the team, kind of looking, you know, overseeing our brand refresh tonight. So it's quite an exciting day, but it's I'm excited to be here talking to you about it as well.
Well, thank you for like shoving those far more important things to have a conversation with us here. As we're talking about the topic, let's deal with it, because I think all of us in the marketplace were kind of a little bit surprised and then excited when sort of Vettery and Hired got together last year. And you were coming in from the Vettery side, weren't you? You're the CPO at Vettery, I understand.
Yeah, I started out about a year and a half ago as the chief product officer at Vettery. You know, in these type of businesses, in marketplace businesses, the platform and the product are how we scale and how we grow the business. And so, one of the things that the company was looking to focus on it in their next chapter was, how do we really become a product-led, platform-led organization, right? That's going to be how we can really make a big impact on the space. So, you know, my background in product and helping businesses and consumers be more successful in various ways was a natural fit for taking the helm at Vettery. About 4 months ago, we found this opportunity. Obviously, we admired Hired as a fierce competitor for many years, and we learned a lot from each other in the market, I would say, over that time. And the opportunity came up to bring these two companies together. And as soon as we met the team, as soon as we saw the product, as soon as we talked to the customers, it became a no-brainer. Because one of the key things in marketplaces is scale. And the scale that we were able to capture by bringing together these two platforms and create a single platform that is the best of both it puts us in a position, I would say, to be really uniquely qualified to further disrupt this hiring industry.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge deal, especially people who care about talent marketplaces. You know, a lot of people were surprised, a lot of people were then excited and then thought, wow, this is a big move as well. Interesting from a CEO perspective, though, like one of the big challenges has got to be, like, how do you like merge the two businesses that were, you know, almost of equal standing, so to speak? It wasn't a case where you had one big fish like swallow up, you know, a tiny minnow. It was actually two, yeah, as you say, you know, one and two competitor in the market, and you're getting together. How do you kind of culturally sort of merge those together? That sounds to me like one of the hard CEO challenges that you could do in your career.
Yeah, I would say that it's absolutely seemed like it would be a huge challenge. And, you know, that was the thing that kept me up, I would say, as we were, you know, going through the diligence process, as we were talking to some of the leadership team on the hired side before, those are the things that I was most nervous about. And I got in front of both companies to announce, announce the bringing together of these companies. I said that as sort of the first thing, is that we'll only be a success if we are able to come together as a unified team. And other, because if we're, you know, still acting as if we're competitors, we're never going to be able to kind of solve the real problems that our both candidates and clients have, and be able to kind of fight the fight that we need to fight to really make a big impact. So the funny thing is that it actually has surprised me at how similar the cultures were, and so very quickly we went to how can we collaborate, which platform has better functionality, which has better processes, and really no ego involved. And it was, I would say, something that I was definitely nervous about, something I was expecting to have to fight a lot and be that, you know, be that voice to make sure that we weren't getting those egos in the way. And truly, you know, it's a testament to the teams on both sides that came together, that too much of a problem there. On the actual, you know, fundamentals of the business, I was also nervous about, well, you know, a candidate who's coming to Veterian Hired, there probably is a lot of overlap. And the clients, there are clients that are probably using our products. And so, you know, where is the real opportunity there? And what we found, the deal was announced, was that there was actually only less than 5% overlap in both candidates and clients. And when you looked at, you know, the city, you know, obviously remote is a huge part of our business now, but we think about the model in a geography-based approach as well. And you even look at the cities that we operate in, the markets, and we just had different markets that we were both stronger in, right? Hired was historically based in San Francisco, Battery was based in New York. And so we each, you know, were stronger in our two respective home markets. Hired was a lot stronger in London. Battery was stronger in DC and Boston, right? So there was just so much natural synergies that it made my life a lot easier than it probably could have been.
That's a really fascinating insight there, because it is true to say that the talent marketplace model seemed to operate at a city level, didn't it? Like it needed the density for it to actually work. So you couldn't go national straight away. Definitely very hard to go international. So you had to just double down on big metropolitan centers, as you mentioned, New York, San Francisco. You know, big enough markets really to grow, you know, a multi-million-dollar business. So very interesting. I need to talk about culture, though. There's a big kind of reputation that, hey, you know, New York companies look like this and, you know, San Francisco companies look like that. I mean, did you encounter that, or did you think actually, no, sort of in the tech world, it was a pretty equal?
I started my career in the Bay Area. So, I'm a New Yorker from birth and where I live now. But I think, you know, the tech community that is in New York is very similar to the tech community in the Bay Area, from what I found. I think there's obviously a bigger population of within the tech community, or a bigger focus on it in the Bay Area. But I haven't seen, you know, too many strong differences. I think great tech talent is really beyond even those two metropolitan areas. What we've seen this year, with COVID in particular, is sort of this opportunity to really broaden the talent pools of within our customers and even ourselves, to look beyond just the city that you would maybe think of, these tech hubs. You can find, you know, great talent across the US, across the world. Obviously, you know, companies are trying to think about post COVID, right, when things go back to some sort of in person, where some sort of in person activity is desired. How does that change? But what we found is that a lot of our customers who have said, okay, we're going to be remote, we're going to be focused on remote going forward, they've opened up the quality of talent that they can find by not being limited to the city that they operate in. Also, every customer of ours, every client of ours, and ourselves, we're really focused on building diversity, building diverse teams. It's proven time and time again that having a diverse team makes a company stronger and have better results. And so companies are just focusing on that more and more. And what we found through our data is that opening it up beyond a single metropolitan area or a single area where the company is based increases your ability to build a diverse team as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's two angles there on the remote side. I want to talk about, Josh. Firstly, like, how did it affect your business personally? Because you guys had to do this kind of a merger almost during a remote scenario. I mean, that's got to be like really weird. So let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about market-wide, right? So let's go to how you negotiated this merger when, the traditional stuff would be you'd be meeting to each other, having drinks, all that kind of stuff. Maybe you couldn't do that anymore. Walk us a little bit through that experience.
Yeah, I mean, I think even before that, it's interesting that Vettery historically was a very in-office culture company. Very like a lot of camaraderie. Everyone, was friends inside and outside of the office. It was very much a big part of our culture. And so going to remote to begin with was a big change for us, just without the hired, piece of it included. We've done so much, I would say, in terms of how do we build the same type of camaraderie and culture in a remote setting. It's extremely hard. I would say we've failed probably 500 times, but we've succeeded, hopefully 1,000 times, and at creating sort of these engaging experiences, so our teams feel like they're part of something bigger than just themselves in their house. With the hired deal, it was, by 8 months into the pandemic, we were pretty used to having all meetings via video conference, and so it really didn't feel all that different. One of the things when I came into Vettery was I brought in a lot of one of the things I'm most proud of, I would say, is I brought in some of the best leaders that I could find across each of the functions. I knew that for us to take the company to the next level, I wasn't going to be able to lead every function. We just needed to find just incredibly talented people from technology to sales to marketing. Most of those people that joined our company throughout 2020, even before the acquisition, started fully remote. So I may have met them once or twice in a socially distanced way eventually, but we built our whole team through video conference. And so it really was natural at that point to do the whole merger through video as well. That being said, we are, we are eager to all be able to get together when things are safe to do so. We really want to get to know each other, in person. And I believe that hallway, how do you sort of replicate that hallway conversation with 150 person team? It's not as easy to do in a remote world, for sure.
Yeah, you know what? That's fascinating, because to have assembled a leadership team in this like really weird way, that's probably a period that won't be repeated at any kind of situation, because, you know, we can anticipate, let's say, going back to the office in some degree. So interesting how you make decisions as to who to hire, Josh. I mean, how do you assess for leadership and this type of talent where, you know, we've got a different set of assessments here? We would no longer have the in-person interview to be that would be the overwhelmingly dominant way in which you'd make that decision in the before times, if you like. But now it's like doing it all by video. How did you kind of assess who was the best choices to occupy these leadership positions?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think a lot of it goes back to where I started my career at a company called Intuit in the Bay Area. And, you know, one of the things, I always had this very entrepreneurial mindset, I would say. And one of the things that I learned during my time at Intuit was the value of great mentorship and how it can really change a person's whole career if they have a strong manager and someone who's going to invest the time in not only getting the company where it needs to go, but getting the employees and the team growth as well. And so I really look at it with two lenses. You know, can this person take us to where we need to go as a company from their functional area in terms of, do they have the technical skills and experience to be able to, you know, steward us to greatness? And then the second piece of is it, do they have that mentorship capability, and is that a big part of how they operate? Because I think, you know, my dream for the Vettery and for the hired team is that 10 years from now, all of the employees look back and say, you know, I am successful in my career because of the foundation that I got during my time at Hired. And that's the bar that I look at as I evaluate leaders to bring them in.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you're almost looking for leaders that can develop others. It's not just the person that is, let's say, functionally competent or is able to, you know, be overly charismatic. Sometimes we get lost on the charisma sometimes, don't we?
It's hard.
Yeah, we get dazzled sometimes. Some people are just amazing, you know, in terms of their ability to establish rapport. But is that the same as leadership? You know, maybe not. Maybe it's one element of it. And the ability to develop others has got to be, you know, a very significant component. Question, keeping on this, sitting on this question of leadership in a remote setting, Josh, do you think it is a different person? Do you need different skills to lead a remote and distributed team compared to an in-office person? Or do you think it's the same skills, just different channel, different kind of slightly different way of tweaking things?
It's a great question. I think it's not necessarily a different person. I think it's just a different set of tools and a different, you know, mindset that you need to have to make sure that you are kind of bringing that same, you know, like you think about before, you know, we were always in the office, right? And I was talking to some of my leadership team about this before. It's like, you know, you connected with people via coffee or you grabbed a quick hallway chat. And now we have all sorts of other ways to do that. But it's not as in your face. It's not as, you know, you have to be more explicit about taking the time to be proactive about it. Right, you have to be able to remember. I need you to reach out to, you know, five people a day to just check in with them and see how they're doing or see how they're feeling about the strategy or check on the progress, see if there's anything that me as a leader I can help them with to get their, you know, to get them on the right track. These are the things that I would be doing or the leadership team would be doing, you know, if we were kind of seeing someone in the hallway or seeing someone right after a meeting and having a quick chat. So I think it's just more about being more explicit about it. You could easily, you know, people have a lot more distractions when they're home, in terms of in a good way and a bad way. I mean, you know, you have your kids or you have your pet or your laundry going, right? You have to be deliberate, I would say, about making that, trying to make that connection with people in the same way that you would have before.
That's a really powerful insight, Josh. I think you're right. In the office environment, you can almost rely on the fact that there's going to be ambient information everywhere, right? You're going to come across stuff. If you're sitting with team, you're going to be able to sense whether someone's okay or not, or, you know, or who's motivated, who isn't. All of that stuff is difficult to do when you're distributed. So you've got to really bear in mind, actually, you can't assume everyone is okay. You have to check in and you have to kind of make sure.
Yeah, we do a lot. You know, we've done a lot more, I would say, in terms of trying to capture that feedback, you know, even outside of these informal check-ins. We have, you know, engagement surveys. We do, you know, we do a lot more communication in both directions, I would say, you know, both sharing information, but also trying to get feedback and figure out what's working and what's not working with the team, with the culture. And we take that very seriously. It's one of our, you know, you look at our priorities for growing the business. Especially when you go through an integration of two companies, and even though things were very similar in the cultures, that team aspect of it is a key priority that we work on as a leadership team. Is how do we get everyone feeling like, you know, swimming in the same direction? Because if we don't have that, at the end of the day, we won't be able to deliver what we need to our customers.
Yep, fantastic. Final question before we move on to, you know, things like product and market and those types of questions, Josh. What was the toughest part of this merger period? I mean, it sounds like it's gone probably more smoothly than probably anybody might have anticipated. But was there one thing that was like particularly sticky and you thought, okay, this is going to need some CEOing to nudge it over the line?
It's a great question. I would say this acquisition has stretched me in new ways across every aspect of leadership. I would say there's not one thing that really stands out as being, yeah, this was the exact example, you know, that was the hardest just ramping up. You know, maybe I can say ramping up on a whole new product, even though luckily it was very similar, but having to ramp up on, let's say, you know, on the hired platform, their sales processes, their, you know, how they delivered the value to the customers, and make those decisions. You know, our whole framing of this acquisition was best of both. Right. And in order to truly know what pieces you're bringing from which side, you have to have a pretty intimate familiarity with it. Right. And so how do you in a couple of weeks become an expert on this other, you know, this other new business? That was probably the hardest thing to do.
And as a product guy, you'll know that, you know, it's not always the stuff that's documented that's important. It's often the stuff that's literally in between the lines that make the product or the service what it is. So there is this requirement just to immerse, I guess, and get right into it.
Yeah, and the last thing is that, you know, everyone for good reasons has vested interest in what the platforms that they worked on and the solutions that they put in place, right? So you need to take a step back and be objective when you do that analysis, so that you're not, again, you know, blinded by some of the charisma or some of the other things that may get in your way of making the best decision.
Yeah. Fantastic. Let's shift focus a little bit and look market wide. Josh, both Hired, Vettery, all talent marketplaces focus city first. That this is in the before times, remember? So you know what? You know, you could pull people to those cities. Now we're looking post-pandemic. What does that world look like? It looks very much like the engineering community is fairly insistent that they're looking for flexibility, location agnosticism. Maybe it is a case where we can start putting departments in where people are, pushing the jobs to where people are rather than drawing them in. How does that affect the product build process for this new business, you know, the merged business? What different things do you think you're going to make in response to that?
It's a great question. You know, we saw a huge influx of increase, I would say, in demand coming for permanent remote roles. And it makes it easier in a lot of ways and also more challenging in a lot of ways because, like you said, the marketplace was historically very city by city. So when you think about how do you sort of find candidates, it's easier to constrain based on the geography. But on the flip side, we found a lot of new opportunities. You know, with the hired brand, there's really strong brand recognition in the market from a candidate perspective. And so we've always captured people, the interest of candidates from all over, right? Whether they're in one of our markets or not. And so this allowed us to start talking to those candidates that maybe we weren't able to talk to before and have helping give them opportunities that we weren't able to help give them before. And again, on the client side, it's like I had said before, it's opening up access to better quality talent that is a better fit for that company. And, you know, the way our platform works is that we really use as much data as we can capture from both sides of the marketplace to understand, you know, what candidates are truly looking for in their next role from, anything from location to the skills that they want to utilize to the type of industry they want to work on to the compensation that they're looking for. And, taking out the location aspect of it only makes our ability to connect, the best people with the best teams more effective. So it's actually given us a lot of strength in that area.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you can see the candidate experience and the customer experience will improve if the market moves in this direction, because there's just going to be more interest and more liquidity in the system, right? So you're going to get less of that fail experience. I'm sure those developers prior to 2020 were fantastic candidates, but for one reason or another, they couldn't move, didn't want to move. They were stuck in a place where no one was putting jobs. There was nothing for them in either marketplace, but now potentially, the opportunities will open up. Let's talk about one of the consequences of remote work. Arguably, is that it's going to kind of create more opportunity for people to explore alternatives to permanent work. In the sense that, maybe I want to run, two jobs. I want to do a couple of days here, 2 days there. Maybe it's a gig type scenario. These things start emerging. Is that in your thinking as a product maker to deal with a non-permanent type of candidate?
So we primarily focus on permanent placement. So people who are looking for full-time employment. We are part of the Adecco Group, which is one of the largest staffing and recruiting firms worldwide. They have a huge penetration in temp workers as well, or gig workers. We see that we see the permanent space as an area that is going to be better for us to focus on. Our mission as a company is very much focused on empowering connections between ambitious talent and teams. And we think that there's definitely a whole, it's a huge industry and very important, obviously, problems to solve. But we're really looking to give companies the ability to build these teams that are gonna be long lasting, and teams that are gonna help them sort of achieve greatness over time. And so we, for now at least, we're very much focused on the perm space.
What's your recommendation for companies that are insistent on an on-premise team? Are you in a position where you take a strictly platform agnostic type of position, saying, okay, whatever you want, Mr. Customer? Or do you feel like sometimes you need to advise a business and say, you know what, if you really wanted to build elite talent, and you wanted access to the talent pool, maybe you should experiment with a slightly different distribution of talent. What's your position on it, and what's the policy on it, Josh?
Yeah, so we want to match both people and companies based on what their needs are, right? So we definitely will facilitate, if companies are their strategy is all focused on being located in a specific location, we can 100% support them. We understand there are benefits to depending on the company that you are, that it may make more sense to have that strategy. But on the flip side, we also are seen as thought leaders in this space. We put out a lot of research. We put out a lot of content for companies to help them build the best teams and sort of build great hiring practices. And we've a lot of the data that we've been showing lately is around why being open to remote teams helps you get better fit talent and more diverse talent. So our platform has shown that when companies do open up to those, they're able to be more successful in those two key areas in terms of the quality and the diversity of the teams that they're able to build. Those are two critically important things for our customers. And so, we are agnostic in the sense that you can use the platform for your needs, but we also try to share as much data as we can with our customers and our candidates to have them make the best informed decisions. One of the things that we relaunched with our new brand is our new vision. Our vision is based on things that we've always done, but we're just being more explicit about what's important to us. And so we see there's three fundamental truths about hiring that we know that in order for us to reach our full potential, we need to focus on three things: making hiring more equitable, making hiring more efficient, and making hiring more transparent. We think those three elements, if we just stay true to solving problems in those key areas, then we're going to be able to really make a big impact on the hiring world. And I see, this question kind of solving for focusing in on a couple of those, like, the transparency, giving the information that we have, the equitable, giving the right people the right opportunities. And so this is an important part of sort of how we can help companies and candidates in the future.
Yep, fantastic. Let's zoom out from the product just a little bit, Josh. Let's talk about your product background. You came straight in out of college, it seems, and you went straight into it, and your track was clear into the product side. Do you think being a product manager makes you a good CEO? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my background, even before, getting into product, I grew up with a very entrepreneurial mindset. By the time I was 13, I had started a couple different companies. I always had this curiosity to learn about how different industries work and see if I could do something, kind of do something different with these industries myself. And so I was always passionate about kind of learning and being curious, and that led me to my first opportunity that I talked to you about at Intuit. I didn't know what I wanted to do at a college other than sort of be curious and learn and work on solving interesting problems. And Intuit had this opportunity to put me into a rotational program, so I got exposure to not only product management, but marketing, strategy, business development at a huge company. So I was working on all these different types of products and solving different problems. And it was at that time where I fell in love with product management, because at Intuit, the product manager, you're the CEO of the product. So you're not only really focused on, working with engineers to actually build the product, you're thinking very end to end. And I always liked the opportunities to think end to end. And so I think being my nature as a product person was always trying to sit myself in the shoes as if I was the CEO of the company, because I think that you need to be a really strong product person and product leader. I think I would say that, so it set me up well from that perspective. I would say on the flip side, one of the things that I would maybe do differently if I were to go through, I don't have any regrets really about my path, but I would say one thing that I didn't do that I would think could have made me even more successful is be purposeful about spending time in a different function. So if I had spent a year or two holding a bag, carrying a bag, selling SaaS products, if I had spent a year or two, as a finance associate, building the models and having to really just hone my skills in each of those areas, I think it would have been, it definitely would have been more valuable, because in my role now, I need to not only, I need to grow those people, right? And so that you need to be, I have people, my team is better than me in each of those areas, and I'm open about that. But in order for me to be able to help them improve themselves, I need to bring a different perspective. And so I spend a lot of time learning and trying to grow myself in areas that are outside of product as well.
Yeah, I think inevitably, and this is true, I think for any human being, you end up gravitating towards the stuff that you enjoy most and neglecting the stuff that you enjoy least. And so that corresponds to the sort of, you know, the more stuff you do, the better you are at those things. And inevitably, you degrade in the areas that you're not so good at. That may just be a condition, but as a CEO, you have to kind of get out of that mindset, because there's stuff you have to look at. You know, that spreadsheet needs to be signed off, man.
Yeah, yeah. At the end of the day, like, the buck stops with you, right? And so you need to know it in and out and be able to talk to it and to be able to put your name behind it. And so, that has been something that I've spent a lot of time. And, one of the things I would attribute to also, my success is building a really strong network of mentors, both formal and informal, that I've, worked with or worked for along the way, or people that I've connected with in one way or another. And so I have a personal advisory board of people that I can call on who I do favors for, that do favors for me, that I can, run something by if I'm feeling uncertain about a decision or about a way to interpret a spreadsheet or something like that. I know that at the end of the day, Google is my friend and I'm going to do a lot of research on my own, I know if I get stuck that I have a team of people that I can kind of call on that are more than happy to help me.
This is fascinating, Josh, because I've spoke to a few CEOs so far, and I think all of them have mentioned that how important it was to have a group of people outside of the structure of your business, that don't have a stake per se, they're not involved operationally. They can give you, hopefully a straight shot as to what the problem is, and you need that, because a CEO, even though you may have cultivated a great culture and a great team, inevitably you can't have exactly a transparent relationship with absolutely everybody, simply because you are the CEO. Stuff that you say and do actually will impact people's lives and jobs. So, inevitably there's a bit of a distance. I think that's inevitable. Assembling this team, this personal advisory board, I love the concept. How do you select those people? How do you know that person is the right person to be on your shoulder there?
I think it comes over time. It's people that, like I said, it's people that I've either worked for or have worked for me, or people that I've done business with and that I've built relationships with over time. Over that time, I've learned to really respect them for whatever that skill set that I think of them as being the expert in. I've seen them, engage in multiple different scenarios where I've just been overly impressed with their level of knowledge in that area. And Many of these people probably don't know, some of them do, but many of them maybe don't even know that I would consider them part of my personal advisory board. But they know that, you know, if I'm calling them, it's typically for some kind of advice in one of these key areas. And they know that on this website that if they ever have any, you know, my background being in product and being kind of, I have experience in a lot of different industries, that if they're calling me, that I'm going to pick up the phone and then I'm going to give them, you know, may not be the right answer, but it's going to give, I'm going to think about it and spend time on it and invest in them. Like I would hope that they would invest in helping me through a challenge that I'm having.
That's it. Energy in, energy out. That's the nature of relationships, right? And in fact, it's the nature of how candidates appreciate products or services, because oftentimes we're asking them to put energy in, but you know, they feel as if they're not getting the energy back, which is why I think recruiting in general has a fairly negative kind of atmosphere. You simply have to go online and type it in. People will check out, and you know, engineers in particular readily report, you know, their antipathy towards the recruiting marketplace. Let's have a look at sort of a personal question here, because something has arrived in as a conversational topic that's been really interesting in our space has been this issue of vulnerability, transparency, and things of this type. Like the new leader should be transparent and vulnerable, like be a human being. I think we all endorse that, but how much is too much, would you say, Josh? Do you have an opinion on this? Like, at what point does being vulnerable become a little bit indulgent? There was a really interesting article, I think Brené Brown wrote it in Inc.com, and she was tackling exactly this line. Like, at what point is it right to share, and at what point does it become overshare? Do you have any thoughts on this, Josh?
No, that's a great question. One of the things with our new values that we, you know, I would not call them new, maybe it's refreshed values. As we brought these two companies together, we spent a lot of time and consideration around what are the values that we operate under. One of those values is that transparency builds trust. And so it kind of points directly to this question. And especially now in this remote world, people, you know, people when they're more on their own, they have more time to be creative and come up with sort of their own version of things. And so it's more and more important for them to have that transparency, to know that you have the best intention, to know that, you know, you as a leader have vulnerabilities and the company has vulnerabilities. And if you put all that on the open, you know, out in the open, that's how you really build the trust, and people know that you that you're able to connect with people in a different way than if you have this wall up of opaqueness. It's in my mind, it's about kind of that connection. And if you feel that connection, if you feel that the person is going to be honest with you, even if they don't have the answer, but you know that they're not hiding something, it makes the relationship a lot stronger. And like I said, transparency is one of the three things that we're focused on from our entire vision. Is how do we make transparency part of the hiring process? Because transparency has been a key thing that's missing from the hiring process, and I think that's one of the key reasons why. You say that, you know, maybe the recruiting space has a bad reputation. It's because of that lack of transparency and that opaqueness. You know, we do a lot to try and bring that transparency forward. We make, you know, candidates and clients talk about the compensation upfront before they even connect, because that's a key thing that's a key opaque area where people are typically not, you know, the alignment gets out of whack later on in the process. When if it's just being talked about transparently upfront, it can save everyone a lot of energy and you can have the honest conversation a lot more quickly. So that's, you know, that's just one example of where we look to add transparency. But I think the reason, you know, for us to be able to solve it for our company, for our clients, we need to be solving it for ourselves. And it's something that's super, super important for us to make sure, especially in this remote time, that we're being transparent as a leadership team, as an individual contributor level, we expect a high level of transparency.
Yeah, fantastic. And I think you're right about relationship building. You need to show a little bit in order for that relationship to really build. Without it, people ain't going to trust you because they know nobody is going to be like 100% bulletproof. So really fascinating. You know what? It's a little bit of a segue, but I want to talk about the comp side of it because that's a really interesting thing, particularly about what is happening to compensation in this distributed world. There's some people saying, you know what? Compensation is going up because, you know, the competition for talent is fierce. Other people are saying, you know what? Distributed economy or distributed labor economy means that you can potentially lower the overall salary because the person doesn't need to relocate to a super expensive place. Where are you seeing things in terms of compensation on the engineering side, Josh?
So it's a great question again. We put out a compensation, you know, a lot of compensation reports and compensation data because one of the things about our platform is that we know we have good visibility into all aspects of knowing what candidates care about in terms of what they're looking for, and then also knowing about, you know, what companies are offering, and then also seeing that middle ground of where they've landed. So, you know, where did that offer actually come in, and where did that candidate accept? We're a unique platform in the sense that we are one of the only few that have all those pieces of information. I would say it really depends on the company and the candidate, right? And I think quality of talent and cultural fit can really garner high compensation outside of dependent on market on specific locations. But I think if a company is not necessarily so strict about the quality fit, they may be able to find people outside of the metropolitan areas that are willing to, work for lower salaries. We've seen over the past year, though, even during the pandemic, in the area that we focus on in technology, the salaries have continued to increase, even throughout. You know, when across many other industries, that trend did not continue. It was a lower growth, I would say, than it has been historically, but it was still actually surprising to see that the salaries across the board in tech have continued to rise.
Yeah, well, I think the shift to remote is also a simultaneous shift to digital, isn't it, for many businesses that have had to accelerate their plans to digitize. So one can only assume that the demand for digital talent, people who can make that happen, has continued to spike. So hopefully the engineering marketplace will continue to be robust for some time. Let's talk about a little bit about the diversity side of things. Josh, you mentioned that was one of the earlier on, you said, you know what, this is a value that we want to bring into how we run our business. But from an engineering point of view, we've always had the reputation of it being very homogenous, or at least, you know, certainly not diverse with regards to gender, certainly not diverse with regards to ethnic distribution as well, probably not in terms of age demographics also. So how is the marketplace model going to, does it support that, for instance, or does it improve it in some way?
So, our business in particular, it's one of the, focusing on diversity and inclusion for our customers from an outward facing perspective is one of our top priorities. We have historically been a thought leader in terms of providing people with the tools and content to be able to make, to build diverse teams. This year in particular, it's even more top of mind, I would say, for our customers. We actually are launching this week what we're calling the Allies series, which is a whole quarter long initiative for us to really invest heavily in the content and the thought leadership that we can bring to the space. So we have a number of webinars that we're going to be doing in terms of how do you embed technology into your DEI strategies, closing up with our wage inequality report that we put out every year. So that'll come in May. And what we found is that, from a wage inequality perspective, this is last year's report, that, you know, there's an increasing gap in terms of between male and female pay, which is something that is, you know, very scary for us, and something that we really are trying to educate and add different products to solve for.
Do you have a theory as to why? I mean, is it still difficult to assess why that trend exists?
It's, you know, there's a lot of information in the report. I don't have everything off the top of my head. One thing that I do recall, you know, is that females are sometimes less likely to be vocal about, from a negotiation standpoint, to a, you know, asking for a raise type of standpoint. So that was, you know, one thing that we highlighted in the report. The report takes into account both data from our platform and also surveying that we do of the population. So that was one, you know, one tidbit, but I would definitely encourage you and the audience to take a look at that report. But one of the things that we did in our product do, like I said, you know, we have our thought leadership and then also what we do in the actual platform to try to enable these behaviors is we have a surveying, you know, an automated algorithm that looks at the different offers that were given to different candidates. And if we're seeing that you have the same role and you're giving a lower offer to a female candidate or a underrepresented candidate in another, you know, population, we're going to flag that and we're going to give you an alert to tell you that, hey, you're, you know, maybe not, this is maybe an unconscious bias that you have here, but you're making a decision, a mistake, same qualifications, but you're offering a different salary than you did to someone else. That's one key feature. We have a laundry list of, I would say, important features that are solving around diversity. The other one, the last one I would just mention quickly is our whole platform is based on skills, right? And so we try to abstract as much as we can. You know, we talked earlier about this charisma, right? That when, during an interview, people may have this charisma. There's all sorts of other biases that are that get introduced into the hiring process. One of those, the key ones that we've seen, is pedigree bias. So you see someone who went to a really, you know, great college or worked at a company that resonates with you, and you think of it as like a high, you know, a strong tech company or something like that. We call that pedigree bias. And so we try to really focus on how do we fairly evaluate the skills and rank and stack our candidates based on those skills. So we call it the skills-based resume as opposed to a pedigree-based resume.
I love it. I mean, I think that is one of human recruiters. I've been a recruiter. The pedigree bias is definitely there. You want to get rid of it. But the truth is, you know that the hiring manager's eyes are going to light up if they see Google on the CV or whatever it is. And you know, that does not represent necessarily the right candidate for you. And oftentimes not, because guess what? You're not Google. You're a different business. And exactly. You know, what is the most appropriate business for you could be a totally different type of person. Okay, very interesting. And by the way, Josh, I love the fact that you're baking in sort of these debiasing features within the software. I think this is a coming trend for HR and recruitment tech vendors generally, even ones that are not specifically targeting to solve for unconscious or subconscious bias, ATSs, and, you know, companies that those types of products that, you know, typically are operational products, they're starting to break these features and products into their systems. And that can only be a good thing, because I think human beings definitely need the tooling to support them as they go through this process. It affects founders' focus. I mean, one of the things that has been apparent to me as I was going through this process and interviewing the founders of these companies is, again, we see at the C-level, there is, you know, a very much a lack of diversity. It is very male, for instance, and it's also very Caucasian also. I wonder what your thoughts are on that. I mean, there's a lot of historical legacy to explain why this may be. But what can we do about that? Thoughts on it, Josh?
Yeah, it's something that I think about, you know, I'd say every day. My you know, my focus has been, like I said, bringing in these best leaders that I could find to run the hired team. I'm really proud that we do have a 50-50 split of gender, half male, half female, on our core leadership team. I find that a diverse leadership team is going to make us perform better. We have opportunities to improve in terms of our ethnicity, I would say, diversity across the leadership team as well. But it's something that, you know, it's so important. And it's something that we talk about. How do we get better at finding these right candidates that will bring a diverse set of ideas and experiences to the table? So I would say I don't have a magic bullet, other than you need to be explicit about it, and you need to make it a focus, or it's not gonna happen.
Coming to the end of the time, Josh, and I appreciate it. Looks like you're about to go as well. But before I let you go, let's have a quick projection. What exciting things? I mean, obviously today is a super exciting thing because we're going to announce that Hyatt is going to be the brand going forward. Exactly. So today is the day. So congratulations on that. What about exciting things in the product side that companies can expect in 2021? What are we going to see? If I'm a customer of Hyatt, what am I getting from the product here?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're coming from an amazing starting place of being the largest AI-driven hiring marketplace, with the combination of Vettery and Hired. Just the more data that we get, the more from both sides, from the demand side and the supply side, the better matches we're able to deliver. We across our entire product roadmap, every single thing that we're working on is bubbles up to how can we make hiring more equitable, more transparent, and more efficient. And so we're going to be trying to uncover more information that was formerly opaque. We're going to be trying to make sure that more underrepresented pools of talent and populations of talent get better visibility to the clients that are hunting for these people and really looking to build these diverse teams. And all throughout the entire experience, it's how do we just make the lives of both the recruiters that are using our platform and the hiring managers that are using the platform easier, and help them fill those roles more quickly with the right people. And then on the candidate side, how do we make the experience be a lot more efficient, so that, you know, they don't write those blog posts or those hate mails of recruiters, right? We want people to candidates to also have a great experience as they're going through the hiring process and finding their dream job.
One of these days, Joshua, you know, you're going to type into Google recruiters are, and we're going to get a different auto prediction that isn't an expletive. Exactly. I wish you all the best in that journey, Joshua. That's fantastic to see your path so far. We look forward to seeing where Hyatt goes. You're obviously busy. I think you're beating people away from the door as we are speaking. What are you going to do after this call, Josh? What kind of event do you have to deal with after we finish Founders Focus?
So today's our brand launch. It's been 4 months in the working of bringing these two companies together. We have the everyone, you know, found out about our new logo and what our new brand looks like and who we represent and how we operate as a team late last week. And after this call, I'm going to start seeing the reactions of how people are resonating with it externally. So going to be talking to some of our customers, getting their feedback, and going to talk to a lot of other great publications and journalists about the exciting things that we're going to be doing together in 2021.
Fantastic. Well, enjoy the day, Josh. It's not every day that you get to relaunch a brand. So have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us on Founders Focus. It's been fascinating speaking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time. And I'm looking forward to maybe one of these days we'll be able to grab a drink together in person.
Look forward to it. I'm overdue a visit to New York. Take it easy, Josh.
Okay, talk soon. Bye-bye.
See you. What a nice guy. And check out Hired, folks. They were the pioneer in the talent market space, really were, back in the day. And it's great to see that the brand is still surviving, renewed and rebadged today. So check out Hired.com, folks. It'll be interesting to see the new messaging and seeing how they go. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed Founders Focus. Follow the channel for more stories from CEOs. We'll see you next time.